Well, good evening and welcome to this live stream event on the 27th of October 2020. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. It's great to have you on board tonight. Very important show this, and I've got Robbie Barwick on standby. He'll be up in just a second. As I normally do, just a few quick points to go through before we get going with this one. Please note, anything tonight is not financial advice. Do play nice in the chat room. It's being moderated, and we will turn people off if they get antsy. This is out of the 27th of October 2020. Use @walktheworld if you want to get my attention. There's always lots going on in the chat. That's great. But if you have a question you want to ask, then use @walktheworld. Also, I've enabled Super Chat. So if you have a question you want to get to the top of the queue, you can use Super Chat to do that. Or if you just want to make a donation to help DFA with everything it does. These shows cost to make, so, you know, just consider that as well. But thank you for coming on tonight, and this is probably one of the most significant, important shows that we have ever done. And without further ado, let me bring Robbie Barwick in, if I push that and that. Robbie, hello.
Hello, Martin.
How are you doing?
Very good.
Yep. So a few people on the chat are saying this is a really important show, and you'd probably agree.
Absolutely. What's the date? 27th of October, 2020. We've been at this 7.5 years since the Citizens Party started fighting bail-in the day after the Cyprus bail-in, mate. We were looking for any evidence of it here, and now this is the last month. Now, it may not be over in a month, but we've got an incredible opportunity in a month's time on the 30th of November when Malcolm Roberts' bill is debated. And we need to capitalise on that opportunity because we could make a real difference here.
Right, absolutely. And the point there is that this is a live issue, right? So people shouldn't think that this is all sort of, you know, pre-positioned and it's all sorted. It is a live issue, and it comes fundamentally down to the Senate inquiry that ran and the final report that came out, which was a bit of a damp squid. But nevertheless, there is a debate in a month's time. And if enough senators actually vote for the amendment, just to be clear, it's for the amendment, right?
Yes.
Then there is a chance that we can actually remove deposits off the table completely. Now, in terms of sort of setting the scene, you know, it's worth just going back a little way, I think, and telling the story just a little bit, Robbie. Do you want to just give us the sort of the short whistle-stop tour in terms of that seven-year journey, because you guys have been driving this for a long time?
Yeah. So before the 7 years, though, it started 2008, right? Global financial crisis. Banking, the currently constructed global banking system was shown to be fatally flawed. And organizations like ours and many other experts trace that back to a fatal decision, a few fatal decisions, but one especially, which was the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act that allowed banks with deposits to also do investment banking and become gamblers, right? That's 1999. By 2008, the whole United States banking system blows up. Many banks in Europe come down. Instead of taking stock and recognizing that had been a terrible decision, through the G20, the Financial Stability Board was at the Bank for International Settlements, was tasked with a way of solving future banking crises with only one condition, really. And this was a gross misinterpretation by the authorities. They thought the biggest problem with what happened in 2008 was that it required taxpayer bailouts, right? And if it didn't require that, then everything would have been fine. So they said, come up with a way to resolve future banking crises without taxpayer bailouts. And so the experts at the Bank of England and the Financial Stability Board came up with bail-ins as a concept. Australia is a member of the G20. Some of you may be old enough to remember Kevin Rudd taking credit for talking George Bush into forming the G20 specifically for this purpose. So we're a member of it. In 2011, we and the rest of the G20 endorsed this Financial Stability Board policy, and it was called key attributes of effective resolution regime. So that was basically policy, global policy from 2011, endorsed by all the members of the G20, except they then had to take that commitment and translate that into local laws, right? And that's what we're dealing with now. But, you know, so that was late 2011. 2013, that's when the public was introduced through the Cyprus story to this idea, hey, there's a new policy in banking, people. You can have your money taken to prop up a bank. And total shock, global shock at this, including, I mean, we were as shocked as anybody. Because we'd been fighting for restoring Glass-Steagall as the policy instead, right? In other words, so you have one or two approaches. You can let the banks keep doing the dangerous stuff they're doing and come up with wackier and wackier shock absorbers, which is what bail-in is. You're the shock absorber, right? Or you can forbid the banks from doing the crazy stuff that gets them into trouble, which is what Glass-Steagall had done for nearly 70 years, and as a consequence, there were no systemic crises in America. And they'd chosen the other one. So we've been fighting for Glass-Steagall, and we knew that was the right way to go, and instead they did this. And we saw it as probably the most immoral policy they could have come up with, really. You know, put the weight of the problem of the banks onto their unsuspecting depositors, right? The most innocent participants in the banking system. A lot of experts agreed with us, et cetera, but it was a month later that we stumbled across the Financial Stability Board reports. This was April 2013. The Financial Stability Board did their, it was a report they did basically saying how far have we come in implementing the policy. And they mentioned in there that Australia was one of six countries that had bail-in legislation in train. And we monitored that situation. So we knew it had been acknowledged to the Financial Stability Board. We went looking for that legislation ever since. We looked for all evidence of it. We were monitoring this very, very closely. 2017, late on an August Friday afternoon, cold, one of our guys in our office, who frankly should have been doing something else, Doug Mitchell, instead he was staring at his computer screen, but he was smart enough to identify, he saw the name of the bill, and he identified the bail-in language in the name of the bill. And he forwarded it to me and said, Robbie, is this bail-in? And we got our legal experts on it and said, and what we found, that's the bill we found that had this massive loophole in it, right, that constructing powers for APRA to bail in instruments of a specific type, but then say, or any other instruments. And that's what, you know, that began then, August 2017, a very intense campaign against this law that basically we've waged pretty intensely to this day. I think I got to know you, January, February the next year, 2018. You've been highlighting it. John Adams has been highlighting it. A lot more people have come on board. And so why we're at here today is that in February, 27th of February, Malcolm Roberts, who we'll get on in a minute, I'm just up on the corner of my screen here, actually. I've got the feed from Parliament. Malcolm's asking his questions right now. So he'll finish. He has 10 minutes. He'll finish asking those questions of APRA. And he's asking about bail-in and another issue to do with debanking. And then he's going to come to his office and join us for this conversation. So Malcolm introduced the bill, very, very elegant little bill that basically inserts explicitly into the Banking Act a provision that says Australian bank deposits cannot be bailed in. All right, it's very simple. I've got the APRA submissions to the inquiry here somewhere. No, I haven't here. Here we go. APRA wrote two letters to the inquiry. They made all sorts of claims, including that bail-in, or so they said, deposits are already explicitly protected in Australian law. By definition, that's completely untrue. There's nothing explicit about it. There's a rather complex, formulaic legal approach. You've got to dip a little bit out of this provision, a little bit out of this provision, a little bit out of this provision, and mix them all together, and voila, you've got depositor protection, right? And that's so vague, it's not funny. There's nothing explicit about it. The convoluted way they make the arguments proves that. So we've got a very elegant solution. And it's going to come down to the simple fact, what harm would it do to introduce, if the government's truly serious about not having bail-in of deposits in Australia, what harm would it do to introduce this, insert this amendment into Australian law? Absolutely none. And it's up to the government to show their true colours on the 30th of November.
Yeah, and the point there, Robbie, is I think first, all of those in official positions are saying bail-in is not there, it's never going to happen, blah, 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 right? But then that complex web of different rules and bits of law and everything, it's like a scrambled egg, right? But you don't know whether, in fact, in the egg, there's a way through to allow bail-in to happen. Yeah. So effectively, the change that's being proposed, which is a very simple excludes deposits, just takes all that complexity away. And so the question you've got to ask yourselves is, why would the government and those regulators around the government not support this legislation that basically cleans it up?
Right. Well, that is the right question. And I think you got figure five there, Martin. So this was the IMF's report on Australia's financial system stability back in February 2019, I believe. And they're talking about bail-in powers, statutory bail-in powers, etc. But look at that highlighted line. Australia has adopted a cautious public stance on creditor bail-in. And, I mean, we take credit for that. I mean, we don't want to be arrogant, but we know how we started hitting Parliament and getting people to hit Parliament demanding answers on this as soon as the Cyprus thing happened, right? And we had the Australian body politic on the back foot on this from the beginning, because what we found out is most other jurisdictions that do have bail-in that applies to deposits, they passed that really soon after 2008, after the Financial Stability Board came up with it, in a way their public didn't know, right? So, for instance, in America, bail-in is in the Dodd-Frank Act that was passed in 2010. That was an 800 pages of act, the Dodd-Frank Act, right? 20,000 pages of documentation attached to it. No one read it. And bail-in's in there, right? Scheduled to the Dodd-Frank Act. Things like that. We saw that everywhere that had bail-in, the public didn't know beforehand it was getting passed. We made sure that was impossible here. And we've had this defensiveness from the government all along. No bail-in. Well, the IMF acknowledged that defensiveness, this cautious stance. And so we just don't trust them, right? Mm-hmm. They want us, they're saying, trust us. Well, that's crazy. You don't trust them, right? Especially when there's such an obvious solution. And if they're going to circle the wagons and stop Malcolm's bill from passing, well, they're just going to confirm why we don't trust them. And that's what, now here's, so we'll get some insights from Malcolm on this, but I just want to foreshadow that by telling the viewer, what we need to do is get the lower ranking members of Parliament, the backbenchers, who are used to just taking orders from on high and accepting the words of authority, and that make them as demanding of those authorities as we are, because we've given them such an obvious solution, right? So we have to show them just how much public concern there is out there, so that they say to their leadership, Scott Morrison, Albo, why aren't we supporting this? What have we got? What possible reason would there be not to support this? Right, that's the position we want to put him in the next month.
Yep. And Robbie, it's worth saying, I think also, that around the world, there are, as well as the US, a number of other countries. The most obvious and transparent example is actually in New Zealand, right?
Yep.
Where, in fact, they've got this open banking resolution. And this is a little cartoon that they've got on their website, which clearly says that here, the bank closes temporarily, some money is frozen, the bank reopens under statutory management, customers can access the non-frozen portion of their money, which is now government guaranteed, customers have ongoing access to some money so they can pay their bills. And so this is in clearly cartoonish terms, but yeah, very clear terms. And it's, you know, New Zealand is as clear and as transparent as anywhere around the world as to how this precisely works.
Well, and look at that. Sorry, just look at that last bubble.
Yep.
Right? The wording is clear. When it's completed, the unused portion of frozen money is returned.
Mm.
In other words, you lose a percentage of your deposit. Capish? Yep. It's gone. Kaput. Right? we're not, that's not guaranteed for the future or whatever. That's just, they're very clear on that there. And their banks are our banks.
Exactly.
That applies to our banks in New Zealand. And our government say, oh, it doesn't apply here. Well, yeah.
Well, it just doesn't make much sense. The other point is we should just explain that most of the politicians, when you write them about bail-in, answer in terms of the deposit guarantee, right? As though the deposit guarantee somehow magically solves the bail-in, right? And it's just worth thinking about that for a second, because basically bail-in stops a bank falling over by taking some deposits and converting them to equity to support the bank, right? The government guarantee, the 250k guarantee per brand in Australia for Australian banks, only comes in at the point when the bank has actually fallen over, right? So every time a politician answers a question on bail-in in terms of the government-backed deposit guarantee, they're obfuscating the issue.
They are. And the Malcolm Roberts' advisor, Richard Hopkins, was in the budget lockup for this recent budget that Josh Frydenberg did. And he was sitting there, he was telling me, reading through the budget papers, and he stumbled across this page that we put out a release on. And apparently it's a standard page in the budget papers explaining the financial claim scheme. And their own explanation of the financial claim scheme confirms what you just said, because they make this explicit point. When the financial claim scheme is used, then the bank must be wound up, all its assets sold, so that the financial claim scheme can get reimbursed from the proceeds. That's how it's structured. Bail-in has nothing to do with the financial claim scheme. It is entirely to do with making sure a bank doesn't get to that position. So for it's a height of ignorance for politicians to keep saying that, but they're told to, and that's why they repeat it. But their own budget papers prove that that is no defence at all.
Yeah, and what we can say is that we've got sight of a number of letters that people receive from parliamentarians, right? All of them with precisely the same wording. All of them, of course, emanating out of, Treasury, we assume.
Yeah, to make definitive announcements.
And as a result of that,
in a couple of days' time, we'll keep people updated today, tomorrow.
I can hear something there. Is that Malcolm, I wonder?
Hopefully what they will show us.
Mm. I apologise 1,000,000%. I had a tab open that was for the Herald Sun.
Oh, okay. That's fine. That was Robert. That was Robbie doing something on the side. Okay. Yeah, so that's fine. No props. The point at issue there is that this is, a really, really critical issue. It's been obfuscated all over the place. But those letters all have the same structure, which is if you get asked about bail-in, answer on the 250k deposit, and somehow that is meant to be a reassuring, right? It's just completely dodging the issue.
Yep. And they've been doing it's actually, I'll hand them this, they're consistent.
They're well trained.
They've been doing that from the beginning. And even I got plenty of examples though of where bail-in has worked in practice. In Europe, for instance, where they have a fully fledged statutory bail-in regime called the Bank Recovery and Resolution Directive, bail-in, when you have a statutory bail-in system, it's everything's got to be laid out explicitly how it can work. So bail-in in Europe only applies to deposits above the guaranteed level of 100,000 euros. However, how it works in practice is they do the bail-in, and there's been 17 instances of bail-in across Europe, not just Cyprus, and mostly in Italy and Spain, right, of varying forms. They do the bail-in. They take the whole lot. You, the customer, are owed back your guaranteed amount, right? Sometimes it can take up to 5 years for you to be repaid the guaranteed amount. So, how does that help you, right? So yeah. that's even with a bail-in system that does honour the guarantee. There is nothing in Australian law that says that the financial claim scheme here in any way is a protection from bail-in.
And there's this wonderful picture that you've sent us through, right? This is in Italy, right?
Yep. So this is one of and poor old Italy. They've had a hiding on this issue. Multiple that there's a second picture of a group of men sitting down. Everyone's wearing a sign showing how much money they lost. And look at the age of the lady. This is her retirement money that's gone, right? So this one's from Northern Italy, and yeah, it got to the point where now the Italian government is so sick of the ire they cop from the Italian people over bail-in. They don't want to do it. They are forced to do it under European law because the bail-in law there is European-wide. They're forced to do it. And so they're coming up with ways to bend the rules that, if you know the politics of Europe, the Italians are coming up with ways to bend the rules that are infuriating the Germans. but they're doing things like the Italians are saying, well, we're not going to honour the €100,000 threshold. We'll honour a €200,000 threshold, right? Because they're just but it's sort of tweaking it like that. That's how much they're sick of this policy. It has not saved the banking system. It's crazy on every front. It destroys confidence in the banks. So then the European Union had to come up with this extra law, which is a preemptive capital freezing for European banks, that the minute the authorities get a sense that they may have to bail in, they'll instantly put a freeze on deposit withdrawals so that the public can't do a run on the bank the minute they get wind there's going to be a problem, because there's been so many bail-ins. As soon as the public hears there's a problem with the bank, they do a run on the bank, more out of worry about bail-in than the solvency of the bank. Right, and it's just destroyed confidence. And this is the European experience. That woman was just one of the victims.
Yeah, and that is the point, isn't it? If they were to do a deposit bail-in, that would immediately blow up any confidence in the banking system. So,
for sure.
But there are two points, Robbie. The first is there a technical feasible path to bail-in, right, in Australia? The answer is yes.
We think so.
We think. Secondly, are they likely to pull that lever? Well, my own reading is not immediately, but there is always the risk. And if things go more pear-shaped later, and we think about derivatives exposure, and you think about the mortgage exposure, and you think about, you know, the COVID raging still in the Northern Hemisphere, and I know the Reserve Bank's come out today and said, oh, whoopee, we're out of the depression, you know, everything's now going to be fine, or recession, whatever, right? That may be a bit optimistic. The point there is we are in very wobbly waters at the moment, very choppy waters, and therefore there are significant risks in the financial system. So they may be forced to do it. What we are doing is preempting that by saying, take away the theoretical path to enable them to do it. Simple change to the law, right? Three or four words, that's all it's going to take, right? Yep. And it's only reinforcing what the government is saying the intent currently is anyway. So why wouldn't you make that change?
Exactly. If we're saying, if you put your money where your mouth is, insert, don't give us reassurances in politician letters, put it in the law. That's the only place it matters, put it in the law. This is dealing with the legal risk, right? Not the likelihood. The likelihood isn't a whole other matter. I will say a few things about that though. A lot of people think that, well, ultimately it'll come down to a political decision, and any government would be really concerned about going down this path because it's going to be unpopular, like the Italians have definitely discovered. Well, one of the power they passed is not a government power, it's APRA's power. And Wayne Byers, the head of APRA, was the head of the Basel Committee on Banking Supervision when he was at the Bank for International Settlements at the time of the Cyprus bail-in. So he was the head of this committee. That committee produced a sort of a rules for banking supervisors like APRA's that insisted they've got to be independent. And that's the politics may not come into it. They want APRA to have this power so the politicians can say, look, it's not our choice. But I think we have a guest with us. Malcolm?
G'day, Robbie. You can see me, hear me?
We can see you.
Great to see you, great to see you, Malcolm. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you for having me, Martin. Good to be here.
You've had a busy day, mate.
Yeah, not quite as busy as last San Decimus. Sometimes we're doing 10 or so in a day, but this one's only been about 3 or 4, I think.
Well, Barrett, well, that said, I do understand you're also in the middle of an intense election campaign in Queensland, so you're going really hard nowadays. I hope you get some rest soon.
Yeah, but it's wonderful. We've got some really solid candidates. I mean, they're a pleasure to be with and very, very proud of them. They're really strong. And, you know, the difference, Robbie, and what's so nice about them, they're not political hacks. They haven't come up through the political process. They're not ex-union hacks or lawyers, or they're all down to earth, feet on the ground, everyday people.
Well, I understand that. I will say, I'll put it, I can be objective, Malcolm. I'll put in a plug for you and your party. What I will say about One Nation, when it comes to voting, you know, people, you don't agree with everything every party says, but what you find with parties like One Nation, when they're in parliament, they're more inclined to listen to the public than the two major parties. And that's for sure. All these issues that we've been trying to get important reform on, the two major parties, you've really got to work hard to even get their attention. But One Nation and minor parties like One Nation are much more attuned to that. And I think that's why you're here, Malcolm, because we have an opportunity to do something about a very fundamental issue that everyone who's watching is very concerned about.
The bail-in.
Bail-in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just echoing or reinforcing your comments, you know, it's so easy to operate in Parliament when we've come back from being in the bush or in regional Queensland or even in North Coast, Sunny Coast or Gold Coast or even Brisbane, you know, just mixing with people, because it's so easy to speak what they're saying instead of what a party machine is telling the Labor Party hacks and the Liberal Party LNP hacks to speak, you know, because when we listen, we really listen because we take it on board, whereas the Liberals know that they can't implement it. The Labor Party knows they can't implement it because they're tapped on the shoulder and say, hey, you got to say this. Yeah. So it's so refreshing to be in One Nation. It really is.
Well, we've got a few. Martin North and I have a few questions for you, but why don't you just I was hoping to see your questions for APRA, and of course we had to start first, so I missed them. Why don't you just recap on how that went? And any comments you want to make about your questions to the Reserve Bank earlier?
I'll see if I can. I've forgotten where I put them. I either put them in. Oh, here they are. The first question was, I paraphrase what they said about APRA does not have the power to direct. This is what they said earlier on in their submission to our. To the inquiry into our bank bail-in, anti-bail-in bill said, APRA does not have the power to direct authorised deposit-taking institutions, that's banks, etc., to bail in a deposit because that would be inconsistent with the objects of the Banking Act, particularly the paramount objective of protecting depositors. Such a direction would be found to be invalid. So I asked who would find it to be valid. And they said, well, the courts. And I said, oh, so that makes sense. The next question then led directly into, how could someone fund the millions of dollars worth of legal fees to take a bank to the court when they just had their deposits cleaned out? I mean, you can't make this stuff up. So,
good question.
Then the next one was the financial sector legislation amendment. That's the bail-in act that was passed by the LNP with the help of the Labor Party in 2018. Does the emergency directions powers have primacy over the general banking directions, S2A, in the Banking Act? Which is about protecting the responsibility of protecting depositors. And they said, they've got no real powers to bail in depositors, you know. So then we went on and said the IMF disagrees with APRA on the strength of Section 2A protections. The IMF have stated that the catch-all directions powers in the 2018 Act provide APRA with the flexibility, this is the IMF speaking, with the flexibility to make directions to the ADIs, that's banks, that contravene the Banking Act. If the IMF are correct, you do have bail-in powers. Is the IMF wrong? And they said, we haven't got bail-in powers. But and then, no, correct, they said, we can bail in capital instruments, but not deposit accounts, you know, like a check and savings accounts. Oh, really? But it doesn't say anywhere in the Act the differentiation between those. Nowhere. And so I said, well, our bill simply clarifies, this is the fifth question, our bill simply clarifies that you do not have bail-in powers, which is what you are telling me here today. Why are you opposing our bill when it does nothing more than to clear up that the law is as you say it is? That's all it does. It just says hands off check accounts, hands off savings accounts. And they said, well, we still need it.
Oh.
So, you know.
Oh, there you go. I'm looking forward to seeing that footage. Now, that last question was the key one. What's the problem with passing the law?
Exactly. And then they said, oh, but let me tell you again about the capital instruments. Doesn't apply to the deposits. And I said, well, hang on, doesn't exclude that. So that's another reason as to why you should accept our bill, because it clarifies that you can't touch deposit accounts and check accounts. That's it. So why are you opposing it? Well, we oppose it.
Yeah. Martin and I have just been discussing the history of bail-in, the New Zealand precedent, all these sort of things. I've got my own copy of APRA's letters to your inquiry, Malcolm. And the word there that I'll just repeat the word that you quoted, that depositor protection is its paramount objective. And one of the things that we absolutely did settle in the debate that happened after the report was that is a complete misrepresentation, because APRA does not have a paramount means single, top yep. objective. APRA has two objectives, financial system stability and the protection of depositors. And it's clear that when those two are in conflict, financial system stability trumps the protection of depositors.
Yep.
And that's why the people who are pushing bail-in worldwide are called the Financial Stability Board. They have decided as a policy that depositors must be sacrificed for the cause of financial system stability. And for APRA to so grossly misrepresent its objectives by claiming, in response to your inquiry, that the protection of depositors is its sole focus, proved to me that they really do. I mean, I just see them as having something to hide on this. And every time they're put under the hammer, like you've just done, they reinforce that view.
Yeah, there were eight submissions that one of the staffers we have in here in our office, very, very good with bank and financial matters, as you know, and he identified that their main complaints were just basically lies or contrary to the truth. It's just that easy to say, and he's debunked each of them, and in our submission we debunked each of them, and then, yeah. then there's nowhere for them to go, but they just hell bent on getting this.
Can I ask a question? Because in the submission that you made, Malcolm, you made the very important point that they could argue that the best way to protect depositors is actually to allow a bail-in, because it allows the bank to continue. So even that line of argument actually goes counter to the protection of deposits, because they could actually say, well, I'm protecting depositors by bailing in.
That's if the bail-in is successful.
Mm. Yeah.
You made that point too. That's right. That's if the bail-in
is successful. Bail-in is successful. Otherwise, it's illegal. Yep. They'd be breaking their own law.
And what you did there is not just an exercise in logic. The New Zealand Reserve Bank explicitly has that view, that they state in their explanation of their bail-in policy that this is how they're protecting depositors, keeping the bank going by taking a portion of their deposits so to save the balance of them. And that's the logic of it.
Yep, and I think there are bail-ins in many countries around the world nowadays,
yep.
provided for by under IMF direction. Because IMF doesn't want to use taxpayers' money. It wants to use it wants to use depositors' money instead and give you a worthless piece of paper in exchange for your bank account.
So Malcolm, what does this tell you about the sausage? You know, the sausage in terms of the way that government, APRA, the Reserve Bank and all those machine processes work, because it seems to me that they're wriggling and squirming to try and keep the thing the way they want it, despite all the evidence.
Well, you're exactly right. There's not much more I can add to that, other than to say this is part of a bigger issue. When we look around those issues, whether it be energy, electricity, water, property rights, well, let's look at it in that perspective. There's nothing more fundamental than freedom. A lot of our freedoms are being destroyed, either through political correctness or with regulations. They're usurping our freedom. That's fundamental to creativity, fundamental to exchange, fundamental to movement, transactions. So that's being destroyed. The next apart from freedom, the most important thing then is secure property rights. They've been smashed in this country. Farmers are now having very little, if any, control over the land they bought and they own. That's a violation of property rights. And it was the Liberals who started that under John Howard's government and in an agreement with Rob Borbidge, the National Party. So the first one, property rights, has been smashed. The second one, you have to have access to water. And that's been cruel. I mean, they've even taken water access off the landowner. It's now the water access is owned in some cases by foreign bodies in Canada, in Geneva, New York, superannuation funds overseas, and the farmers can't get it, and that's driving the price up. So we can't get access to water. And then the third one, and this is arguably, apart from property rights, the most important, because the history of the development of our world, and you think about it, 200 years ago, the way we live today could not have been imagined. No one would have even foreseen it. We've seen a huge exponential increase in living standards and longevity of lifespan, in ease and comfort and security, safety. And we have so many options now. A king 200 years ago would not be living as well or as long as someone on welfare today. And yet the thing that drove that was ever decreasing prices of electricity, relentless decreasing of energy, because energy is the productivity multiplier. When you increase productivity, you increase wealth and prosperity. That enables us to take care of the environment. The environment is far better shape now than it has been for a century. And so what we're doing is we're reversing all of these essential traits, and they're being replaced. They're being destroyed with no data underpinning it. And sometimes the data shows the opposite of what is needed. The property rights theft, the energy theft, the data shows there's no need for that. And so what I'm saying is the far bigger problem, Martin, is the fact that government, Labor and Liberal, and National Party and Greens are making decisions based on ideology, emotion, fear, and they're not making decisions based on data. And there's only one way that will lead, and that's downhill for us. That's why our society is starting to crumble materially, and that means eventually it'll crumble in other ways as well. So that's the really sad thing. That's the bigger picture, again, not making decisions based on data. And the RBA shows this, the APRA show this, because they're making a policy just to suit their masters, not to suit the people. Government is no longer serving the people in this country. The people are serving the government.
Now, Malcolm, my view on that is that, in a sense, the people have vacated the field. There's a lot of demoralization out there. And if we can turn that around, if we can get the people more engaged in the process through what we've done, that you've worked with us on, such as the cash ban, this bail-in campaign, etc., so the decision makers in Parliament are actually confronted with the views of the people, not just at election time, but all the time, right? Through submissions, through phone calls, through emails, etc., staying constantly engaged. We do have a potential to make a difference. How do you see that from inside the building?
I agree with you, and I must compliment you, and compliment you both on what you're doing now, and especially you, Robbie, on what you've been doing. The cash ban was phenomenal, wasn't it? I mean, one of our staffers saw it coming into Parliament. He said, "Hey, what do you think of this?" And we thought it was terrible. So he even rallied the Greens then, and they thought it was terrible. So he got them stirred up. So they joined us, and then we joined with the other crossbenchers. We got all the crossbenchers to oppose it. And then we went to talk to Stephen Jones. I think he's the shadow finance minister and shadow finance spokesman. And he didn't know what to do. And lo and behold, the Labor Party passed it through the lower house. But then Labor consigned it to an inquiry in the Senate, which was good. But what you did was phenomenal. You organized so many people to put in submissions, because you spread the word. You said to support what we're doing. We're standing up as a voice in Parliament. And then what was the really crucial? Oh, that's right. One of the Liberals themselves in Victoria stood up and turned a branch against it, and then started turning the state against it. And I called him up and said, "Keep going, mate." I won't mention his name, but and wonderful guy. And so what you did there, you ignited the grassroots movement. But you also had us in the Senate doing that work and galvanizing the crossbench and potentially the Labor Party. And it looks like the institutions are still backing it, but the government may be wavering. We don't know. That's what happens. But, you know, it goes to a deeper point and a stronger point. Who's the sovereign of this country? It's the everyday voter. Because we're the only ones, Robbie, who can change the constitution, our governing document. So we're the ones really who are supposed to be governing. And we elect people to represent us. And when we elect people from the Liberal Nationals and the Greens and the ALP, we're not electing an individual voice to speak on our behalf. They're elected to be the party spokesman and the power broker spokesman. They're not doing what the people want. So the people have got to stop voting these robots into place, because we need real citizens in here speaking for real people.
Now, Malcolm, what's your view? Now, I'll preface it by saying I know you've been very busy with the Queensland election campaign. So that's over on the 30th or 31st. And then we then have a month until the 30th of November, Monday the 30th of November, when it's scheduled for the bail-in, your bail-in bill to be debated, right? So the purpose of tonight's live show is to sort of ring the bell for the final lap of this campaign, just get everyone really focused for the next month on staying engaged with politicians. Do you have a sense of the lay of the land yet in terms of the Senate and how they're looking at the arguments we're making about what's the harm of passing this bill? What's your sense of how things are looking?
I think we introduced this earlier in the year. To answer your question, I don't really have that because it's been a very disrupted year and we haven't met with people much at all. We know that the Labor Party was moved to become a bit concerned about the cash ban bill because of the pressure we put on them. We reminded them of their constituents, which is something you rarely hear in the Labor Party these days. They've abandoned their core, but that frightened them. So I don't know where they'll go. We haven't really done a lot of lobbying, talking. I think the Greens will probably join us and support us on this, and I think the crossbench will. It all depends on the Labor Party.
It does, yeah. Well, I think, but I'm heartened by what you just said, because we did ship the Labor Party on the cash ban. I think people on this call should take that to heart. And basically our goal in the next month is to ship the Labor Party on this bill.
Yes.
That's going to take a lot of effort. And everybody calling your local member of parliament and all your senators, we're all in a state, you've got 12 senators, call them all and then call them again and ask for responses. Make them do the work, right, so that they start talking to the people upstairs and, you know, their superiors and saying, why on earth would we not pass this bill? All the worst thing it'll do is restore confidence in the banks. I mean, what's not to like about that?
Exactly. And if we look at the bigger picture again, we see negative interest rates in many countries, almost negative here in Australia. Went down to zero in America, didn't they, recently?
Close. Martin would know better than I. Where they at?
Yeah, I'm not totally clear, but it could well be, yeah.
I think they went
zero in plenty of places.
If not to zero, they went down very close to zero. Australia was very low. And there are many countries, including some of the biggest countries and most powerful economies in Europe, Japan, with negative interest rates. Switzerland, I think, had negative interest rates.
Yep.
So that gives enormous control to the banks. Then if you have a cash ban bill, then you must use the bank. And then if you have a bail-in, well, that's the end of it. That's trapped.
Yep.
So, I mean, it is about control, and that's where government is increasingly headed. They used to do it with a tank or a gun or a jackboot, but now they're doing it gradually with socialism, and essentially when you steal property rights, you've got communism, which is what's happened in this country. We're still socialist, sadly. We need to get back to being free again, but it really is about control. And government is working for vested interests in this country, very powerful vested interests. There's no conspiracy here. Everyone can see it. When you see so many of these instruments going through this parliament, you know, you look at the Labor Party and the Liberal Party and the Nationals, they collude to whip through anything to do with the IMF, most things to do with the banks. They stall on doing anything against the banks. And we seem to be the conscience in the parliament, and the Liberal Party and National Party and Labor Party just seem to be the lackeys of the banks.
Well, look,
getting donations, I don't know.
Yeah, look at the lowered lending standards announcement the other week. I mean, the Royal Commission may not have may as well not have happened for them to make that announcement. You were involved in Senate inquiries before the Royal Commission into exactly the consequences of bank lending, and the government's just thrown out any kind of sense of learning a lesson from the Royal Commission experience, saying, no, no, go your hardest, boys. I mean, how crazy is that? And does Labor look like they're even going to oppose that?
Well, you look at the banking code, as you know. Our office is the one that's held that under the spotlight and said, what's going on here? You haven't approved the banking code. You haven't regulated it, and yet it's existing. And then they're trying to change an instrument that's not even existing. I mean, it's just making this stuff up. And then the COVID comes along and they make changes to it. They're not approved some of those changes as well. So the banks are a law unto themselves, and they work through the parliament. You know, and Scott Morrison as treasurer said 26 times, wasn't it, there will be no Royal Commission into the financial services sector. And the Prime Minister at the time, Malcolm Turnbull, said 16 times, there'll be no Royal Commission into the financial sector. Pauline got a Senate Select Inquiry into lending to primary production customers. And as you know, we went out into the bush, encouraged submissions. They came in. We then used those submissions to go back into the bush. We went the day before we held hearings. We held hearings first in the bush, Charters Towers, Roma, Perth, to look after the Western Australians. And then we went out, myself and people from Pauline's office and my office, and we went out and we listened to the farmers and coached them on how to deliver the core messages in their inquiries. And we got so much information, Robbie. It was so rich. And then we said, right, banks, Sydney. And I don't know that much about banks, but with the data we have, it was easy to hold them accountable and to really grill and make the Australian Banking Association chief executive, who's a pretty slick customer, Anna Bly, it was easy to make her uncomfortable because we had all the facts.
Yep.
And then we held the, what do you call it, insolvency practitioners accountable and administrators. And, you know, there's clear conflicts of interest that we just asked some of them, and they said, yes, they are in conflict of interest with the banks. And so we had all of this come out, and then we were about to present it, and the committee agreed, the inquiry agreed, to have a recommendation to have a Royal Commission. And we believe that some of the Nationals then went to the Prime Minister and said, you must have a Royal Commission because we're going to announce it. And so out came the announcement for a Royal Commission just a couple of days before Pauline's report was to be report was to come through. And so that recommendation was taken away out of our report by Pauline because we didn't need it because they agreed to a Royal Commission. So that's how a party that's got a bit of energy and a bit of grunt can actually change the schedule. But now what we've got to do is we've got to we changed the Prime Minister, we changed the Treasurer, we changed the Liberal National Party government position on a Financial Services Royal Commission. And now what we've got to do is hold them accountable to make sure they implement the damn recommendations.
I think that's the key thing, because it's easy to get cynical when you see such a shameless policy like, oh, we're going to lower lending standards. You think, well, what's been the point? But no, the fight's never over. But yeah, you do achieve these things. I'm glad you recapped on that. You do achieve these things, right? That was not the banks wanting a Royal Commission. It wasn't the government wanting a Royal Commission. It was forced on them, right?
That's correct.
And we can do that with other things in this area, force it on them, but it takes enormous effort.
And it takes good people, and we've got some very, very good staff in our group. In fact, every one of them is fabulous in our two offices, Pauline's office and my office. They really punch above their weight. We are just blessed with really decent people. And the thing I love, Robbie, is that they're not committed to me as much as they're committed to Australia. They can see that we're the last hope, and I'm not saying that with any chest puffing or thumping. I can honestly see that. If it wasn't for us, we have held the line on so many areas. And it's very proud and thrilling to do that. But we've got to get more people from One Nation into the everyday people into the parliament.
Martin, sorry to hog the conversation. I just wanted to raise one more thing with Malcolm, and it's for the sake of the viewer. A new issue has sort of emerged this year to do with the banking system, which is this policy of debanking, or power of debanking that the banks have. They're using it like crazy. A couple of people we know have been victims of debanking. The banks are using anti-money laundering concerns to target businesses in the cash economy, but all those businesses are in one way or another in competition with the banking system.
Right.
They're getting debanked. So obviously you're aware of this, Malcolm?
Yes, I am. And again, we've got a fabulous member of staff who's right across these financial areas. And so he pointed out, these are the questions that I've just been asking. He pointed out, gave me a question that said, you know, what about this particular institution? It's been debanked. And it's a direct competitor to the banks.
Yeah.
And then with ASIC, I think, that's right, with ASIC, we asked the question, well, there's another supposed competitor here that's been bought by Westpac to expand Westpac's reach. So they either gobble them up or they squash them. So yes. Coming back to the debanking, one company has been debanked, couldn't go by Westpac, I think it was, then couldn't find a bank anywhere that would take them on. And they are an alternative to the mainstream banks. And then we find that their employees and their owners have been debanked in their personal accounts. Yep. I mean, if you can't go to a bank if you can't get an account in a bank, you haven't got any access to cash, really. Proper finances, rather, not cash. But
yeah.
So that's what they're doing. And as you pointed out, they're gold bullion people, their various cryptocurrencies, their various people who deal in cash. They're alternatives to the banks, and the banks want to squash them. And APRA is going, what debanking? what debanking, you know?
Is that right? I'm glad you raised that with APRA. That's very good. That's exactly the sort of thing we have to hold them to account for.
Malcolm, can I ask one last question? The people on the chat, one of the things they're interested in is the concept of a sovereign national bank. Do you have a position on that, Malcolm?
What do you mean by a sovereign national bank? A people's bank? A government-owned bank? Government works for the people? Yeah. Yeah, we're very keen to have that. Very, very keen. We always have been. Pauline has been for many years. Ever since I started digging into the climate scam and realizing what was driving it, who are the main beneficiaries financially? The people who would benefit from carbon dioxide trading, that is trading nothing, are the major banks, the globalist banks. So what we believe is that a people's bank is vital, and that's what we're working on. And if you look at history, Australia took off when we had the Commonwealth Bank in its original form as a people's bank. If you look at the only bank I'm told that has made a profit in every year of its existence in the USA is the People's Bank of North Dakota. I think it's called the State Bank of North Dakota.
Yep.
And that has kept that state vibrant because it lends to farmers, it lends to small businessmen, I think it even lends to individuals. That has made a profit every year. Even when the big globalist banks collapse and crash, they have gone on. We have to have a people's bank. And there's a Liberal now talking about it, Jared Rennick. So I don't mind talking about supposed political opponents if they've got the right policies. So, it's good to see we're not the only ones now, but unfortunately Jared's in a party that's going to squash that kind of thing.
Well, can I interject here? It's interesting. There's a growing push for it. The Greens are on the record through Peter Whish Wilson, your nemesis in the Senate. But as you know,
their ally.
That's right. As you know, you're on common ground on that. Of course, Bob Catter has always been a champion of it. One Nation has been a very prominent supporter of it. Now, Jared, even George Christensen has endorsed the idea to his constituents, Malcolm. He won't mind me going public with that information. No,
but it is important to remind people and yourself, Martin, that Peter Whish Wilson said, we support a government bank, but for a different purpose. So there are some things we can, and I think he even said to me one day in the Senate on the floor, as we were passing, he said, you know, we don't want to do what you want to do with it. We want to do something different, which is to give more control of government. That's going to be a difficult one to face off on, but we have to get a people's bank. Mm. Australia took off we emerged from the First World War, a tiny population and potentially huge debt, but we had no debt. The Commonwealth Bank financed it all. And then it financed the early shipping of our product at that time, wool, agricultural products. And after the First World War, it did the same And that's what really established Australia as a country in Europe, exporting to Europe. So it's been done by so many places and proven we have to have it.
Well, Malcolm, I really appreciate your time tonight. That's been very valuable. Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with the group here. More than 700 on at the moment, and more people will watch it post. We'll obviously continue to encourage them to express, the support for the change that is in the Senate, and when it's voted at the end of November. Let's see how it transpires.
Thank you very much, Martin, for what you're doing, and same with you, Robbie. Thank you very much for working for the people.
Good luck for Saturday, Malcolm.
Thank you, Robbie. Thanks, Martin. Good night.
Thank you. Good night. Well, there you go. So that's a pretty useful contribution there from Malcolm. And we also got a bit of an insight as to how the sausage is cooked or not cooked or created. Pretty scary, really, Robbie.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think... It's better to be in there knowing how scary it is than outside assuming, wondering.
Indeed.
What's the Heisenberg principle? That observation, you can't observe something without changing it? If I've got that one right, maybe I'm wrong. Yeah, one of those scientific principles is that. So let's get in. If we're observing it, we can change it.
Yeah. Now, just a couple of admin points here. Doug actually made the point we should get the bill name right. It's not a bail-in bill, right?
No, it is. Okay, this is very important. It is the Banking Amendment Deposits Bill 2020. And when you call or email a member of parliament, you are asking them to vote for it. And that's it. I want everyone watching should reflect on that. Usually we're asking you to tell them to vote against something. Right, this is different. We've taken the initiative here. We've gone on the offensive. We need them to vote for this bill. This bill will settle the issue. Right, it couldn't be more perfect. And bear in mind, we didn't get to discuss it with Malcolm. But one of the things Malcolm didn't have time to mention, of course, is when he was talking about the fight for the Royal Commission in 2017. Just as it was getting to the point of having to be called, we discovered that Senator Malcolm Roberts was an Indian-born Brit and he was out of Parliament for a little while. And so he wasn't there when the bail-in law passed on Valentine's Day, February 2018. And essentially the bill that he's put up now is the amendment that One Nation wanted to move to that bill back then. It should have been dealt with at the time. They should have been able to get up in the Senate and say, okay, we move an amendment, insert these words to protect deposits from bail-in. And the senators in the room should have been able to say, well, okay, can't hurt, will it hurt? Pros and cons, debate it. But they would have all come to the conclusion, at least it can't hurt, right? And they could have had a vote on it then. But they weren't allowed to do that, if you know the story, because they had pre-informed Matthias Cormann. That's what they were going to do. Matthias Cormann said, we'll get our Treasury lawyers to look at the wording for you. And while they were in their offices waiting to hear back from Matthias, the government rushed the bill through the Senate. Right. They really did the dirty on them. And so now, we have had to go back to the drawing board and do it through a formal bill. The bill's in there now, gets debated on the 30th, Banking Amendment Deposits Bill. We need everyone to phone and email members of parliament a lot. And I mean a lot. Don't stop. Demand responses. Respond to those responses. You need them sick of you in the next month. But to make the point, vote for this bill.
Yeah, and Malcolm made the point that that strategy was highly successful with regard to the cash ban, right?
Yes.
So we know that this can work. And I know it's a pain to have to keep picking up the phone and calling people, but the definition of a democracy is those who stand up and do something, right? This is a chance to stand up and do something.
Yep, no, that's right. Don't stand on the sidelines and complain. People can conjure up a lot of scenarios in their minds about politics when they don't participate, Martin. what you find when you do participate. It's a bit more boring than you thought it might be, but you actually, if you're consistent, right? If you don't take no for an answer, if you keep going and keep going in there, keep going back and going back, you will be noticed, and you can start to have an influence. And so that's what Malcolm has confirmed, that definitely has happened on the cash ban. It's no small thing to change the position of the Labor Party. Hmm. And we did that. Now we need to do that again in the next month.
Yep. And, you know, it's often incremental steps, one by one by one, that takes you to somewhere where you want to get to. And it's just worth reflecting, Robbie, isn't there, that if you think of the international forces from the IMF and the Bank for International Settlements and all the central banks, right, there's a set of coordination, at very least, some would say more than that, right, to take economies around the world into a particular direction, which essentially is more debt-laden, more trading-based in terms of financials and financial derivatives, yep, and away from the real economy, right? And that is actually the big picture, of which this is just a small part, because there is actually a really important bigger thing going on here as well.
Well, you know, last year, Scott Morrison gave this fairly dramatic speech at the time where he went after what he called negative globalism. And he was talking about a lot of those things that, you know, whether it be on any given subject, there's often a global position, a global or a cited global consensus. The thing he specifically omitted to mention is the most obvious version of negative globalism, which is the global banking system. That is where there's more dictation. Australia is being more consistently dictated to on a daily basis through global banking institutions than in any other way. And it's not because we've been conquered. It's because we surrendered through an ideology. We gave independence to the Reserve Bank. We gave independence to APRA. And by default, they're no longer really, in practice, accountable to the Australian people through the Parliament. They orient to the IMF and the Bank for International Settlements. And through the Bank for International Settlements, what they're actually orienting to is the club of the world's most powerful central banks, right, that are writing their own rules. And I think all governments sort of assume that this is some kind of global authority they've got to bow down to. No, they give them that authority by just vacating the field and say, oh, well, it's your responsibility. And I've had that on, you know, firsthand, a politician telling me he went to see Scott Morrison about something that was APRA's, that, you know, APRA was doing wrong a couple of years ago, and Scott Morrison said, that's not our responsibility, that's APRA's. And this politician was shocked because he thought, well, we're the elected government, surely everything is our responsibility. But no, that's not how the government thinks. Oh, the banking system, that's you know, they can take care of that. Well, that banking system is self-organizing, and they're trying to keep a failed system going. And the way they're keeping a failed system is going is trying, they're resorting to more and more extreme measures: negative interest rates, banning cash, bail-in, are just three of them, right? The negative interest rates is the most bizarre. That shows you how broken the system really is. But to make all these things work, they've got to get more and more extreme, and they're pushing the levers that they've got to the limit, etc. And it's crazy, right? It's absolutely crazy. So one of the things we'll achieve, apart from protecting our deposits in law, is we take away these avenues, and yeah, there will be a crisis, but there already is a crisis. We need a crisis where the elected government step up and say, we're responsible for doing something to actually fix this, right? Force a change, fix the system, reorganize the banks, sort them out. Don't just keep adding more crazy and crazier policies to prop them up further. And that's what we can achieve with this policy.
Mm. Yeah, and that's really the point, isn't it? Again, one step at a time, but actually part of a bigger picture. And, you know, a few people have been asking about, you know, how do they get in contact with senators, and, you know, should they use Twitter or what? What's your view there, Robbie, as to the most effective way of actually having an influence?
All right, let me be blunt. Only because we've got a month to go. If we had more than a month, I think I'd encourage a wider, you know, array of options. With a month to go, Let's pretend this is 1960 and the only technology you got is your phone.
Very well.
Because there's nothing, it hasn't been improved upon since Alexander Graham Bell, let me say that. The voice over the phone that senator's staffer has to take, that call from you, is incredibly powerful. So what I suggest you do, though, is use your email to send, you know, a message. Now, one of the things, I don't know if people have seen, the Citizens Party produced a two and a quarter minute ad on bail-in, fronted by yours truly. And we're actually doing that we've done this for this campaign because we're advertising it on Google and through those methods to get more people involved. We're encouraging people to email the ad to members of parliament. Some people have been playing it to them, to senators' staffers down the phone, because in 2 minutes I explain the whole thing, right? And people have been listening. But anyway, or you can just listen to it yourself, and so I can repeat that, something like that. But you don't even have to. So if you want to do that, you can do that. All you have to do is say, I'm a constituent. I'm calling to tell you I want you to vote for the Banking Amendment Deposits Bill 2020 on the 30th of November. Right? That's all you got to do. But they start getting a lot of calls like that, it'll make a difference. Now, people here on who have been part of the cash ban campaign may remember a couple of times when Martin, you and I got together and put out the call, quick, hit the phones, and it worked, right? We got instant feedback, right? People were being drowned with phone calls from constituents all around Australia, and it worked. So we need to do that this month. So that's the number one thing. Yes, use your email, but please follow it up with a phone call. Now, so you get the if you've all got a computer, you go to the Parliament website, which is aph.gov.au, and you'll see on there they have contact details. In fact, they have a menu, a horizontal menu, and the third item is senators and members. And that's what you need to go to find the senators for your state. And the important thing is to call the senators. I would also call your local federal member for your electorate, but unless you're in the ACT or Northern Territory, you've got 12 senators. Please call them all 12 in the next month. If they get calls from thousands of people the next month, they'll know about it. Right, and what will happen is they'll have caucus meetings before this debate. In those caucus meetings, we want those backbenchers to be saying to Scott Morrison and Albo, why on earth wouldn't we pass this bill? What's the problem? Right, what do you got to hide? We're sick of all these calls. But, that's what will make them do that.
Yeah, it is, being a bit of an irritation, right, and basically making sure that people understand that there is, a degree of concern in the community, right, and that it's an informed concern, right, and it's not going to be fobbed off with 250k deposit guarantee answers, right? But right, it really is a very simple thing. Vote for the amendment in the Senate. It's that simple.
Yep. So some people, if you haven't done this before, it's natural to be nervous. Work through that. Once you do it the first time, though, you'll realise, in fact, it's one of the most empowering things you can ever do, to have your first conversation with a member of parliament or one of their staffers, because you tend to think, oh, well, surely they know something, they're in there. They often don't know very much at all. You'll think, how can I know more than them? And just by virtue of the fact you're concerned enough to make the call means you probably know more than them, I can assure you, on this subject. And once you do it the first time, we've had a lot of people have this experience, they really get fired up and are keen to do more. And we do need people to do more. Do all 12 of your senators in the next month.
Yeah, indeed. And just a few acknowledgements at this point from Hiar, from KOH, from Javier, and from Wayne, and from Ron, for your contributions through the Smart Chat tonight. Really appreciate it. That really does help. And for a number of other people who were in the chat asking a few questions there, I've sort of picked and choose some of the questions a bit tonight, Rob, because there were lots of other things we could have explored. But I think what I want to do is keep this relatively clean and straightforward with regard to the bail-in tonight. But I think it's just recapping a couple of quick points before we close out, right? So the current state of play is that there is a certain theoretical risk of deposit bail in Australia. It exists, right? And we know that it exists in other countries too. You can trace it back to the IMF and to the other global entities, and it's sort of cascaded down. So there is a theoretical risk. There is a bill which is sitting in the Senate, which has just a few words in it, which can take the risk off the table completely. So the question we have to ask ourselves is, why would politicians who are consistently saying there is no intent to bail in deposits at all not approve that change and pass it? Right? Yeah. That's right. And then the final point is, we have a window of opportunity, 1 month pretty much from today, to continue to influence the senators in particular who will be voting on that amendment. And the focus is obviously on the Senate, but particularly Labor, right? Because we think they potentially may be shiftable.
Absolutely. We've done that before. We can do that again. And, I mean, don't rule out Liberal Party and National Party backbenchers as well, though. I mean, they're all fair game, so call them all. But the difference is Labor's not in government, all right? And the way the Senate is structured is, the government doesn't have the majority, and Labor has no political reason to protect the government on this law. They don't have one. Now, Labor, though, I don't want to overstate it. Labor does have their own, because they're a major party, they do have their own orientation to the IMF BIS global system, right? So, but they also claim, like the government, that there's no intention to bail in deposits. They send pretty identical letters, frankly, to the government members, right? All citing the same thing. But the fact that they don't have a political reason to protect the government is what gives us a possibility here. And if Labor aligns with the Greens and One Nation and the other crossbenchers to vote no, we can stop this, right? So this is an incredible opportunity. But people need to be don't think this is a pass and a prayer. Look at what we've done. Look at what we can do with the effort. But you've got to make the effort. So those calls are important. So I'm putting out ring the bell, final lap. We've got a month to go. Go like the clapper. The calls you make this month will make a huge difference.
And I will just add one other thing, Robbie, that John Adams did a show with myself on Interest of the People some time ago, pointing to the fact that, in fact, there was a deposit bail-in in the 1890s. In Australia, in fact, the first bail-in in the world, right?
We probably gave him the idea.
Well, it was actually wasn't government inspired; it was actually bank inspired. But not only is there a theoretical risk, right, but it has actually happened in the past already, right? Yep. And whether, in fact, they would ever do something, right? Well, you might think that. APRA probably wouldn't, but then the key point there is they are driven by financial stability, and if they think that financial stability can be protected further and buttressed by converting deposits into equity in the banks so that the banks continue, whatever the cost, that's what they'll do. So there is a theoretical and there is also the risk of practical. So this is not just a nonsensical, angels on the head of a pin.
No, exactly.
This has real bite.
And I've got a mental image I want to put in people's minds. If if you ever read any sort of account of the 2008 financial crisis, the definitive moment was when the US Treasury Secretary literally got down on his knee in front of Nancy Pelosi and begged her for the $700 billion TARP bailout. He begged her because the expectation was without that action, the whole world system's coming down, right? those scenarios can happen. And that's this kind of scenario in which the people making decisions are going to be less worried. If there's not something in there to explicitly forbid them from doing it, they're going to be less worried in the, under those circumstances about your feelings, your political, the political consequences, right, than they will about this sense of, oh, the whole, you know, if we don't do something this extreme, this could bring down the whole system. That's the, now, the point is there's always an option that you don't have to do the other way. You can take the banks in hand and reorganize them and do whatever. That's, you know, we need to force a better option on the government, but we need to take this one away now and do it explicitly through this provision. So keep that mental image in your head. Extreme things can happen in the world, right? And that's when bail-ins happen, and that's what this bill will protect you from.
Yep, and that's just three or four words can make all the difference in the world. Robbie, I want to say thank you for your time here tonight. I think that's been an important conversation. And, you know, the comments have been obviously a bit mixed, as you'd expect. Some people are very supportive, some people are very anti, but that's okay. The point is we help to inform people as to what's going on and, you know, what the situation is. That's important. We haven't answered a few questions tonight. For example, people were asking about offset accounts and how that works out. The truth is, the detail in terms of how bail-in would be applied and what sequence is completely non-clear, yeah. Right? Nobody knows.
Look, it is very up in the air. I mean, offset accounts is the most confusing one, frankly, because are they a liability to the bank? How does that work out? Because the whole purpose of bail-in is, it's quite simple, a bank has certain liabilities, and it's going insolvent because the liabilities are starting to exceed its assets. And bail-in is designed to cut the liabilities down by a percentage, or give it what the Europeans call a haircut, right, to get the liabilities back below their assets. So on paper, the bank's solvent again. And the biggest liabilities of a bank are its deposits, and you've got to identify a percentage you're going to take. In Cyprus, it was 47.5% of deposits above 100,000 euros eventually, right? When banks do that, they don't bother to make a judgment based on every individual account. They just identify the percentage of liabilities they want to cut across the board, right? That's the logic. That's how it's worked in practice. So just understand when you're a lot of questions that can't be answered because of the reasons you said, Martin. But what the viewer needs to understand is all those things mean that's why we've got to have this amendment in. The amendment takes care of all that. There is no doubt after the amendment's passed. That's the key.
Yep, and it's simple and straightforward, right? And that's you know, why wouldn't it be passed? I think that's a good note on which to end this conversation. What I'm going to do now is just quickly summarise the show for next week, just to let you know that I'll be back next Tuesday. We'll be talking then about monetary policy. I'm expecting the Reserve Bank to cut rates to a wonderful 0.1%. And I also have my latest mortgage stress data out for the last month. So that'll be another important show. So join us next week for that. Robbie, I just want to say thank you very much for your time tonight. I think it's been a useful show. Thank you for getting Malcolm to come and be part of the party as well. That was, I think, cute, you know, pretty useful.
Oh, yeah. Well, and Martin, let me say thank you. I mean, it was fate that brought us together in January 2018. I remember someone sent me a link to your show and you were talking about bail-in. You're the first person I saw talking about it other than us ever. And then John Adams and you started doing really important shows on it, and the prominence of the issue really went up, right? Very yours and John's contribution has been incredibly important. So now we've advanced to this stage. You know, Malcolm Roberts is definitely a collaborator on this, but he, as he was from the beginning, but now he's in a position to do something about it. And this is how the sausage is made, right? It's not all bad. but it ain't easy. It's just it takes effort. So we're now in a position to achieve this. Oh, and can we finish on one final graphic, Martin? John Hewson, just to remind people.
Yeah, this is actually John Hewson. Parliament should endorse the Banking Amendment Deposits Bill to explicitly rule out the possibility of bail-in, where authorities would allow banks to convert your deposits to shares in a banking crisis, should be a no-brainer for any government. And Robbie, you might just want to explain to people who John Hewson is in case people don't know.
Well, John Hewson is the former leader of the Liberal Party of Australia, and in quite a famous chapter because he lost the unlosable election. However, this subject is his forte. John Hewson is an economist and a banker. So there's plenty of parliamentarians leaders and prior ministers who don't have any real qualifications on anything. You have to say John Hewson is qualified in this area, and he said it's a no-brainer, right? He saw the value in it straight away. I think he instinctively knows just how crazy it would be to have any kind of bail-in, and I could sit here for the next 10 hours and cite experts against bail-in, right, for the reasons it undermines the banking system. Let him have the final word. Repeat, when you make your calls, quote that to members of parliament. You can look up, if you forget, we can email, contact the Citizens Party, send us an email, info@citizensparty.org.au. We'll send you a copy of the tweet. And you can quote that to members of parliament.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. It's a gold quote, and comes from a quarter which is on one hand surprising but also very significant. So that's why it's a good point to end on.
Well, and I just saw a question there from Carl Dunn. Does John Hewson still drive a Ferrari? He probably does, which is why he doesn't want bail-in. that's where he's coming from. I'm sure we all have our own version, right? So let's fight it.
Robbie, thank you very much. Appreciate that. Take care. And I'm sure we'll be chatting again. Perhaps we'll do an update, not maybe as a live, but an update show in 2 or 3 weeks, and just tell people how things are travelling, because this is going to be important.
All right. So hit the phones, people. Got a month. Hit them hard. See you, Martin.
Thanks, Robbie. Okay. And thank you very much for everybody watching the show tonight. Thanks, Cookie Boy, for your contribution there and your donation to charity. Really appreciate it. And we'll see you again next week. This is Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics signing off. See you next time.